Welcome to the Vortex Nation podcast, brought to you by lovers of hunting, shooting, public lands, the Second Amendment, and good food. What's up, everybody? Jimmy and Mark over here on this side of the table, and opposite us, we have Mr. Ruben Alexson and Adam Maxwell. Conveniently, all four of us somehow just made it back from the SHOT Show 2020 at the point of this recording. I don't even actually know when this is going to come out, but no shot flu over here. Everybody pretty much made it out alive, so that's good. Hopefully, if you're listening to this and you were there, you made it out alive too.
Happy and healthy.
Man, it's wild. Like, half the crew here might be dead. I don't know.
The office is a little bit empty right now.
So anyway, the topic at hand here is SBRs. And for the gun nuts out there, those are three of the most exciting letters in that, sequence to hear, because SBRs are sweet, they're cool, they're sort of like dangerous or badass or, you know, like forbidden or whatever. I don't know. There's something about them that seems just super cool. And, of course, as we know, they are not any more dangerous or anything than a regular one. But, you know, it just gives you that feeling that, like...
And they are so hot right now.
Those SBRs are so hot right now.
And actually, Jim, for those possibly maybe less than SBR stands for...
Short-barreled rifle. And we'll get into all this stuff. We want to talk a little bit about the old history. We want to talk about the old history of SBRs, you know, why they're great and all that stuff. The one thing, though, that we should say, and we want to caveat this before we go any further, is that, like, depending on what state you're in, depending on who you are, depending on a billion different things, and also just, like, this might come out at one point in time and something might change a couple months after this podcast actually comes out. Just know that this podcast is not at all intended to be your citing source for any legal advice or whatever around SBRs. We are literally just talking about the topic of them and some of the applications behind them and a little bit about what we know as far as in our state at this point in time. But again, we are not legal experts. You should always consult your local regs and all this stuff, current federal, all that stuff.
What's out there, it seems more complicated than it is. Mm-hmm. The process of acquiring an SBR is not that hard.
Right.
Owning one is not that hard. There are intricacies to it, and there is a process, but it's simply a matter of filling out the paperwork, which is brief and not complicated, and having a little bit of patience. But doing those two things eliminates a lot of people. So
it's true.
If you're willing to fill out a form and wait, you can have one.
And if you've gone through the process of owning a suppressor,
which we had, you guys were on a podcast with us talking about why suppressed.
Guess what? This is way easier and faster.
Nate, explain that when you say it's way easier and faster. How is it that it's any easier or faster than getting a suppressor?
Well, Adam can probably relate to speak to this more than I can, but typically the time to process the form is quicker.
Really?
It's right now, as of this point in time, you could be under 3 months to getting your stamp back.
Oh my gosh, that P90 has to happen. PS90 now has to happen.
And there's an e-form too, so that can expedite things.
Oh my gosh.
Oh geez.
That's
e
really
for expedite.
Yeah.
What is the reason for that? I mean, where do they fall within, I guess, their respective designations between, like, maybe a suppressor and SBR, or is it like a volume
thing? We should classify
thing?
what an SBR is in the U.S. at this date.
Yes.
Okay, so according to the National Firearms Act, a short-barrel rifle is any rifle with a barrel less than 16 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Without
length.
Going into the full... Mm-hmm.
Does overall length come into play at all, or is it just a barrel length?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because if you had... For example, a 12-inch barrel, but you had a 4-inch flash hider permanently attached, that counts. It's not just the rifled portion. It's anything permanently attached to the barrel.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So you could have a 4-inch barrel and let's do the math here.
12.
Yes, 12-inch suppressor. If the suppressor is permanently attached and you already own the suppressor legally, then that's a legal rifle.
And permanent attachment.
That's a one stamper.
Permanent attachment usually happens by welding.
Yeah.
So okay. if the piece that is the barrel continuously equates to 16 inches, it's a rifle. Anything less than that, it's a short-barreled rifle, and that applies to this process.
Okay.
So, and then kind of what Ruben's talking about a little bit, if just really quick, without getting too deep into the weeds, when we talk about producing NFA items or acquiring or transferring them, there's four forms. There's actually five, but there's four forms. Form one is intent to manufacture.
Okay.
Form two essentially says that it exists. Form three is to transfer between licensed dealers or manufacturers. So yeah. That would be between rifle company and your dealer.
Or between a suppressor company and the place where you intend to buy it from.
Yeah. Right. And form four is transfer to a private individual.
Okay, got it.
So for what Ruben's talking about, why you can get an SBR faster than you can get a suppressor currently is if you form one, a lower, just any lower, you okay. declare to the ATF that you intend to manufacture this into an SBR.
Mm-hmm. I currently, declare manufacture.
Currently, that process is taking less time than it is to transfer Form 4 NFA items.
Which is an already manufactured item that you're transferring.
A complete SBR or a suppressor.
Understood. Oh, okay. So actually then, if you were to go and try and get an already done SBR, like a factory SBR, that will take about as long as a suppressor.
Currently, yes.
Currently, yeah, at this point in time. Got it.
That's for chumps.
Do you guys say, like, if you're going to do an SBR, do you go for building one versus just acquiring a factory SBR?
I don't do that anymore.
Oh,
I know, you're not into that. You're all about, like, the factory.
Mr. Elitist over here.
Hold on, we should get into that too.
That was a lifetime ago.
We should get into that, but I also know
I had a bad experience.
I'm gonna tease that out here, but I also want to get into the history of the SBR too, why it's even a thing. Did we talk about that in the suppressor one? The SBR came from like the old Tommy gun gangster days. Am I right? Yep. Or is that the full
that's
auto
where,
thing?
That's where. Well, it was all one and the same essentially.
All the NFA stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because I believe it was 1934, the National Firearms Act.
Got it.
And at that time, they were breaking up the mob. So, like, you know, I mean, Machine Gun Kelly and Al Capone and Bonnie and Clyde and all that stuff. I mean, at the time, there were no regulations on these. You could buy a Browning automatic rifle from a Sears catalog. You could buy a Thompson submachine gun.
Oh, man. What's that, the movie Highwaymen, when they walk into that?
Yeah,
dude,
Colt
so
Monitor.
Cool. Such a great scene
that
when
was
they walk
real.
Into that gun store. Yeah, they're grabbing the whole freaking store.
Yeah. And a lot of those guns were the chosen, you know, chosen tool of those people in that profession on the bad side of the law. And they were having a hard time catching guys for racketeering or running drugs or running money. And so the easiest thing to do is to make what else they do illegal.
Yep. Hmm.
Interesting.
So that collective group of items was put together under the National Firearms Act. And, well, similar to what they do today, they're like, well, we're not making it illegal. We're just going to attach a tax to it. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they attached the tax of $200, which was like a bajillion zillion, it might as well have been at the time, because that was also the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So interesting. So that number hasn't...
That law is on the books, relatively unchanged since 1934.
When I was looking at that, because for whatever reason, in my mind, I pictured it being, I guess, a more modern-day implemented law, and to see it date back to 1934, I was like, huh, and I was going to ask why, and so I appreciate the explanation there. So
it's curious how they chose the 16-inch thing. I've always wondered that, you know? Like it had to have been, that length must have somehow magically... included or whatever, it must have magically gotten rid of the ability to get, like, I don't know how long the barrel on the Tommy gun was. It
must have been something like that.
Like, it must have been like 12.
But yeah,
14,
it's a completely arbitrary number. And that's like every 16 inch barrel on an AR-15, like, are you listening, people? Every 16 inch barrel, that's a completely arbitrary number. It's just to get around the NFA. The M4 has a 14 and a half inch unpinned barrel.
Yeah, so when you hear people talking about barrel length as a measure of performance in an AR, it's
the only reason,
that it's performing is because it's not illegal.
I should have brought it out. In fact, MC Ryan, if you get the chance at some point, you can pop into that locker. There is over there a 14.5. And when you look at a 14.5, it is hilarious how, like, you're just like, I can't believe that this is a short barrel rifle.
Right.
Right.
Or it would be classified as one.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, why this particular set of firearms is classified any different than any other ones. It's completely arbitrary. It's kind of like all the magazine ban stuff where they say, like, well, having 10-round mags will magically make us safer. Like, it's just 10's just an arbitrary number.
Right.
Just like 16 inches is on rifle barrels and 18 inches is on shotgun barrels and just a number they arrived at.
It's right on the can table special.
There. When Jim was asking about that overall length, and I've got my Wikipedia notes in front of me so I could get learned before we talked about some of this stuff. But
learned.
So before I could learn it. Learned it.
Overall length, I think, gets to some of this now where, you know, I'm going to claim this for the millennials. Like, they've started to game it a little bit to get around some of the vagueness of the rules.
Wookiee is saying 26 inches.
They found the gray areas. So when you get into overall length, you can do this thing where it's like, it's got a short barrel, but it's longer than this length or shorter than this length. Or that's where you also get into like the pistol braces.
Yeah.
On the back
end.
Oh
my gosh, yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is like when you said like you don't go and get your lowers SBR'd and build your own, mm-hmm. I think one thing that you can do that doesn't change the functionality of the gun, if you look at like the SB Tactical, the SBA 3, mm-hmm. right? It's an adjustable. It uses an M4 carbine buffer tube. Like, the only thing about that whole firearm that makes it a pistol is the brace.
Right.
So, like, I have no problem. You see, like, Daniel Defense came out with this new PDW at SHOT Show. How many companies offer a version of their SBR in a pistol format? The gas system length isn't any different. The barrel length isn't any different. It's literally what stock or brace you have on that buffer tube.
Exactly.
So that is something you could buy the pistol and do the paperwork on a form one that lower, get it engraved. And now that's a purpose built gun, right? That's not piecing your own little thing together. It's like, this is a pistol. Now I'm going to get the paperwork done to do this. That doesn't make it an inferior gun, I don't think.
Oh, no. Oh, I thought we were talking about like
not just piecing traditional together. AR. No,
yeah,
not Legos.
Yeah, the pistol brace game has definitely changed the SBR acquisition game quite a bit, especially because initially when they were approved, you had to put it on a pistol buffer.
Yes,
which is a tube that didn't have any of the detents for the stock
lockouts. Yeah,
but that was never part of the legal description of a brace. Right. Companies figured out that, hey, we don't have to use a pistol buffer.
Yeah, they submitted one. They're like, well, what about this one that works on a carbine buffer? And they said, yep, that's cool. And then everybody was off to the races.
You kind of secretly wonder if like the ATF's like, yeah, we just don't want to have to do all this paperwork.
Yeah.
It really does make
you
wonder.
For real.
Because now, like, I remember.
Yeah, my $200 is going to fund the government that much more.
Right.
No.
Because I remember there was a time when the pistol brace thing was kind of just catching on, and the first ever pistol brace that you saw, I remember thinking to myself, like, I was floored. It was like the first ever SB Tactical one. You know, it was like, yeah. It was pretty big, pretty bulky. Yep. It had straps all over it.
It was horrendous.
And I just remember thinking to myself, you don't need a form, like, whatever for that? Like, it's not an SBR?
Which yes, I didn't even show. You don't need a form. You can stop writing the ATF now. Like, stop asking them questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mom said you could go play with your friends. Don't ask her again. Hey, Mom, are you sure? Like, these are my friends. Are you okay with it?
Yeah. But I do remember at first seeing that and asking people, like, is this the alternative now to an SBR? And at the time, it was still kind of clunky. It's still, there was the question of, can I shoulder it?
Yeah, rotated.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And people were like, well, no, it's still not going to be good as an SBR with like a true like stock, you know. But now you see it, and I really am wondering, Adam, you shoot a lot of SBRs.
How come
you go through the trouble? Which again, I know you said it's not that difficult, but here's the thing: is it more difficult to just buy a pistol, or is it more difficult to, you know, put together an SBR that you paid $200 and waited a couple months for? I get that it's not that difficult, but it's easier to just get the pistol.
Right.
How come you still opt for the SBR?
Well, I guess to ask the same question in inverse, why don't we put pistol braces on full-length rifles?
Fantastic question.
So, like, I mean,
I don't like it because it's puzzling.
You know,
I don't like it because you're challenging me.
Yeah, right? But, like, I mean, stocks are stocks for a reason, right?
I was
like
a firearms enthusiast too, so.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, that's probably most of it, actually.
No, that's
I have one good point, though.
That's fair. It's like when somebody asked me, like, why do you still drive a manual transmission when automatics are faster?
Exactly.
It's like, because I like them.
Right. There's the point where, like, we all saw the thing that came out where the ATF redefined what a pistol brace can be used for, and, like, overnight, now it's illegal to shoulder it. Okay, well, now my pistol brace is a waste of money.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so there's all these things where overnight they could send out a letter that says, pistol braces are no more a thing. Well, now everybody's going to file and try and get their form one done, and you're going to have a huge wait. It's actually, I mean, the paying the $200 is a pain in the butt, but that's never going to be in question. There's never going to be an overnight thing.
Okay,
I say never, but it's not something where tomorrow it's illegal, right?
Yeah.
And then you have to go through all the process of, you know, whatever.
That makes sense. It's sort of, you've put that capstone or whatever. It's like, yeah, I'm good. I did all of the potential necessary work.
Yep.
So at this point, there's,
I
get it.
The real answer to your question, in addition to what Ruben said, and yes, I'm an enthusiast, so I just wanted it. The real answer is, if we go back to some previous episodes, we were talking about the beginnings of Three Gun Nation the competition world, where they took this kind of outdoor open terrain sport and then they condensed it into this TV viewable format. It was super fast. It was super close. Some athletes in that realm started using SBRs when they were like, well, I don't need an 18-inch barrel to shoot this. And that kind of intrigued me quite a bit. And I also, in combination with that, there's a specific stock that I want to use with a short barrel.
Okay.
Regardless of which rifle I shoot, I want to have the adjustable kind of precision rifle style stock on the back with the adjustable cheek riser. The more ergonomic stocks.
Okay, sure.
Which
you're using like almost what I would consider when I look at it, like a long range stock.
Yeah. Yep.
With with a short barrel.
Yeah. For me, it happens to be the TAC mod or like the XLR.
XLR is a good one.
Style stocks.
Full components.
Okay.
Yeah. Full adjustability on length of pull, full adjustability on comb and cast and things like that. So I want to use that stock on a short barrel gun.
Okay, sure.
That's an SBR no matter what. And then also some of the stuff we do here at Vortex, and then also displaying kind of towards the tactical community. A lot of folks ask, well, you know, why don't you just get a pistol to show to those folks? And I was like, well, it doesn't display correctly because when you're presenting to those folks have SBRs.
Okay.
Yeah. So know, it's like, I mean, it's kind of like when you pick up on things they did wrong with gun handling in movies. It's like that was a subtle detail that
right.
you can pick up on. If
mm-hmm.
So we have SBRs to display correctly to customers, and then I wanted specific stocks for competition stuff.
Can you even shoot with a pistol AR in competition? Like where you're technically supposed to have a rifle, a pistol, and a shotgun, for example? Like, can a pistol AR... It'd be like having two pistols, wouldn't
technically,
it?
No.
Okay.
It's technically written in the rules that it has to be a rifle.
Like,
and I believe that goes...
You.
They do?
Yep.
That you can't use?
You can use a pistol. They're not concerned with the ATF's classification of a gun, more the application
of
it.
Some of the three-gun rules, they do write in there that you cannot use a
pistol.
Yeah,
a lot
race.
Of places don't let you.
And I think that's concern for the event promoters of running an event that may contradict with whatever the current ATF opinion is, and that's the word opinion.
Yeah.
But some folks are worried about sanctioning an event where they're running that gray area. So a lot of event promoters will just say, no, it's too gray for us. Rifle means rifle, pistol means pistol.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Other than, you know, wanting what you can't have, or maybe what's hard to get, or, you know, a little bit more, I don't know. Like, there's just, like,
it's
a
got
feeling.
You know when you watch the movies and the dad is like, don't go for the bad boys, you know? It's like,
It's the bad boy.
You know?
Not in reality, though.
No,
but, like,
that's
what
the thing
are,
is, it's not in reality. So
not
of
in
course,
reality, but.
We do have to be careful because, like, some people get really sensitive about that stuff. It's not the bad, but it just has that. Like,
you said they're bad? No, that's not what you're twisting my words.
Exactly. It's cool.
It's cool. Super cool.
It's a little cooler that you got to have a little extra paperwork.
Yeah.
It's just cool. Yes.
Yeah.
It's got that allure to it.
But there's like a ton of, like you said, a lot of these designations are arbitrary, but there's a lot of practical reasons why you'd want a short-barreled rifle. So kind of go into some of that stuff, like whether it's competition or people using it professionally for, you know, whatever.
Well, I know my initial attraction to it, and this might even surprise you, that it was a hunting application.
I like the way you think.
Nice. You know, I kind of came to all this through, you know, or our family tradition was deer hunting in the North Woods of Minnesota, where it's very, very thick pine forests.
Right.
So I had 22-inch bolt-action Browning A-bolt going through the brush. Some of the other more senior members of our party, they had the what I call the traditional Minnesota deer rifle, which is that Remington 742 or Remington 760 with the 18.5-inch barrel and 30-06.
So you got the pump and the auto in there.
Yep. My dad's weird. He wanted a pump. I don't know why.
I think in Minnesota you usually see the pump. In Wisconsin, it's a semi-auto.
I've seen more of the autos than anything.
The 760 Game Master and a BAR, both in 30-06.
Yeah. But
make
yeah.
it great again.
Nostalgia like, times two.
Not technically, or not even close to an SBR in tech context of what we're talking about, but it was a much shorter carbine rifle for working through the brush.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of where my attraction was. Like, I knew how hard it was to get my rifle through the brush, and I was like, man, that's a really good idea.
It's kind of a repeater, if you will, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Very handy.
Fast follows.
Yep.
There's something about when you see a hunting rifle with, like, an 18-inch barrel, too. I almost always think, is that an SBR? And everybody's always like, no, it's got an 18-inch barrel. And you're like, oh, shoot. Yeah, it just looks really short.
Yeah, right? But that was my initial attraction to it. In context of ARs, it comes from, you know, a lot of the special operations stuff. Mm-hmm. Dates mostly, I think a lot of it dates back to Vietnam with SOG and cross-border operations into Laos and Cambodia. They were using experimental versions of what is now the AR-15. And that later, in like the 90s, transformed into what's now the Mark 18, which essentially was the result of them cutting the barrel as short as they possibly could and it would still work.
Okay.
So with a standard M4 operating system.
Carbine length gas,
10.3 inches was the furthest they could cut it back and the gun would still work. And then it became a standardized spec. And like it continues today, from what I understand, future submissions to that sort of application. Now they have to be 10.3 because somewhere, or maybe a couple places in the U.S. inventory, there's like a compartment that has to fit into.
Oh.
And so it has to be, like, I don't know if it's like the one-man submarine or whatever it is, but like there's a little compartment for the dude's gun and it can only be that long to fit in there.
10.4, no go.
Yeah, 10.4, no go.
Weird things like that in history.
Like, We'd like to do some different things, but the closet.
Like the $200 thing from 1934 is still there today. Yeah. It's just like some, it's like, goofy how that stuff works.
To clarify, too, how it's measured is typically it's measured, you know, from the breech face.
Yep.
So, like, if you have your bolt closed, they'll stick a rod down the barrel and measure to the end of the barrel.
Okay.
With the rod touching your bolt face or your breech face.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of questions like barrel extension, not barrel extension. Like, what is it? It's like close the bolt, drop a rod down it, and measure it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark it with a pencil and pull it out and go a little bit farther just to be safe.
That part of it, the ATF is very clear on.
Yes.
Yes. Interesting it must have been for them to also, this is like kind of random, but test that MK18 or whatever down to 10.3, like, you know, just keep lopping off 0.1 inch. And also, isn't it kind of weird to be using a rifle where they're like, yeah, if we'd have gone 0.1 inch more, the thing wouldn't have functioned right. So we went 0.1 up, you should be good. Like,
yeah,
I'd be thinking to myself, are you sure? Can we put 0.2, I'd be good with that.
I'm more of a 0.2 guy.
I'm fine.
Throw another quarter on there.
If you were 22 years old in Vietnam, you were an old guy. Right?
That's true.
Picture a bunch of 19-year-old kids with hacksaws, like, sawing off the barrel on their rifles, trying to figure out what barrel length they wanted.
Sarge?
Is this one okay?
Yeah, you're good.
Does it work?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's fine.
Hop on the Huey.
It's true. 10.3, though, that's like the
That's how they got it with the standard, you know, triangle front sight post and everything. That was as short as they could get.
There's also, in my opinion, too, there's also like a practicality of a 10.3, or in this case, when I've seen those and I've seen shorter, there's always like the, you know, it's like in cards, like how much horsepower can you get? You know, mm-hmm. it's like SBRs, how short can you get? Some people make the little barrels that are like, you know, like a 3-inch right. barrel or something like yeah. that. And I always think to myself, it's like, well, at some point you're shooting your fingers off. At some point,
yeah.
it's hard to actually use.
Yeah, the cartridge isn't doing what you want it to do. Like, yeah, because, yeah. you know, like in for most part, we're talking about like AR-15s and stuff, right? So 223 was designed to burn in a 20-inch barrel. So if yeah. you shoot it out of a 7-inch barrel, like there's a lot of propellant that's really just turned into flash.
Looks cool.
So, you know, now there are specific applications like PDW stuff where they're really trying to do like deep conceal, very limited applications for it. And, you know, ballistically, there are pros and cons to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going below 10.3, that's really what you're trying to do. You're trying to like fit this thing into a concealable role.
Are yeah. you better, and this is just a question then, are you better going to like a different cartridge, like yeah. a 300 Blackout then, yep. or even like a yep. 9?
Yep, because 300 Blackout was designed from its inception to shoot or be optimized on a 9-inch barrel.
So okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Right.
I think there's some other applications that are, aside from the tactical or professional gunfighter role, that are they really make sense too. I think if you look at it from a hunting perspective, not necessarily SBR, but like shorter can be better,
right?
Right? If you look at it, especially if you're hunting with suppressor, like suppressor is going to add length, it's going to add weight.
Oh yeah.
And if I go on a hunt, you know, my Wisconsin deer rifle is like it's a 16-inch 308 with a suppressor on the end of it. The overall length isn't even as long as like a traditional, like Adam said, like the typical Browning A-bolt or something like that. It's probably more along the length of like your 7400 or 742 or 760.
Yeah.
Right? It's overall length like 21, 22 inches. Like, and that's a 308 with a suppressor. And I'm plenty good to 400-600 yards. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Regardless if I'm going to shoot that far or not, the ballistics will do it. Like the bullet mm-hmm. will do it. The velocity is good enough, especially in a cartridge like that. And you're saving weight on the barrel and length moving through the woods or moving through wherever. Like if it takes up less space in your pack, like shorter can be better.
Yeah. yeah. Are most people, when they go full on SBR, like for example, you're talking about a 16-inch 308, like not SBR, but it's yep. a shorter, it's relatively short barreled rifle. Just not legally designated. So, but like, are most people doing this to semi-automatic carbines and, you know, stuff like that for the sake that a lot of times those rifles are being used in situations that may require them to be handier, smaller, whatever? Or like, are there people doing it to bolt guns too? Or are there people doing it?
There's a pretty big movement yeah. right now in the short barreled bolt guns, especially yeah. with some cartridges having that performance kind of peak at a shorter barrel length, maybe not okay. necessarily 10 inches, but a lot of modern bullets for, we'll call them ARs, I guess, like in 5.56 chambering, you know, that's out of a 16-inch barrel. So you're not losing a ton if you're going down in length, or like a 300 Blackout, like you yeah. said. I mean, 9-inch, 10-inch barrel, or 9mm. I mean, a lot of those are designed to burn up all the powder in a 5.5-inch Glock 34. So
right.
you know, you're not necessarily losing a lot. And then, you know, one other thing you can, and I say shorter is better, it can be better, but one thing that you do gain, listening to guys like Brian Litz talk about barrel length and barrel harmonics and stuff like that, you have barrel whip. And
sure.
After you know your initial combustion, you start to get vibration and barrel whip starting to happen, and there's kind of a higher likelihood that barrel whip could negatively affect your point of impact if you go longer and longer and longer on the barrel.
Okay.
Now again, this isn't every case, every scenario, but there are instances where you go shorter, stiffer, and more mm-hmm. rigid, and typically you'll see less whip. So there can be, you can have a rifle that's like a 24-inch barrel, and you shoot it and figure out with a certain load that it shoots okay, and then you keep cutting barrel length off and you don't necessarily see any negative impacts on accuracy, and you can
okay,
see
right.
you can actually see positive impacts on your accuracy
because
okay. that you can time where that point is where it shoots the best
mm-hmm.
and that has to do with, you know, barrel harmonics. So yeah. I mean, as long as you're getting the terminal ballistic performance out of the bullet that you're shooting, more velocity isn't always better. Like
yeah.
you ever hear your mom tell you like nothing good happens after midnight, so be home by then. Like, most bullet manufacturers would agree that in terms of terminal ballistics, nothing good after happens after 3,000 feet per second.
Well, and I think, too, like, let's say you are running a 5.56, and I guess this is speculation because you guys know a lot more about this than I do, but, like, okay, so I shorten my barrel, maybe even considerably, right? Maybe I've lost some velocity, the cartridge is becoming less efficient, but also for the application that I'm using that for, I'm probably not shooting long range.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Is it really a loss? Is it going to do everything it needs to do? I would think so.
Yeah. Well, and, I think it's kind of like a lot of the rifle scopes we sell for hunting, where it's like guys who want capability out to, I don't know, 600, 700, 800 yards. Was like, when was the last time you shot a deer at 800 yards?
That, yeah.
Actually, most of your eye shooter is about 50 yards. That's a very interesting story.
Yeah. And then and the other thing, like, you have the bullet designed kind of velocity range where it's designed to expand properly.
Right.
A lot of bullet manufacturers will suggest, you know, don't go over this threshold and don't go under this threshold.
Sure.
So aside from the energy required to put down that target quickly and ethically, there's a point where if you're over a certain foot per second threshold, the bullet will either pencil through or it just explodes, right?
Right.
And it doesn't deliver that energy to the design, to the desired, you know, organ or vital area. So there's guys that do a lot of Western hunting with some of the high step and cartridges, right? Like the 7mm and the 30 cals that are really smoking. Like you start to think about some of the Nosler cartridges and some of the Weatherby cartridges. There's a point where that mule deer pops up 50 yards away. You might not get the performance you want out of the bullet. So now you're limited by being too fast.
Yep. Hmm. Yep. Well, I've seen that even with some bullets that are designed more for long range performance, which is great, but have
accuracy-wise,
they're great accurately.
Yep.
They expand amazing at long range, but had some, you know, some little bit wild stuff happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like inside 100 yards.
Ryan Muckenhorn was on here talking a little bit about that when we had the 6.5 Revolution podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that I hadn't thought of before, but. Definitely, yeah, cartridge selection comes into play big time.
Yeah.
Speaking of cartridges, obviously we've mentioned a few that tend to go in SBRs, 5.56 or in a blackout. We'll go back to like ARs or AR similar type platforms here, but what are your guys' personal go-tos as far as cartridges go when you're shooting them out of an SBR? Do you just go with 5.56 or is it like, oh, there's this new one that's all the rage, you know, whatever. You know, like there was the 6.8
SPCs
and
some other stuff.
Yeah, like 300 blackout for sure. I mean, the one I shoot the most is 5.56.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, other cartridges that have a seat at the table, 7.62-39, 5.45-39, you know, on
the Russian side.
Yeah,
the old Ruskies.
The Krinkoff and things like that. Those are very popular SBRs.
9mm is becoming like the thing.
9mm
is becoming like the thing to put in rifles now.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
I mean, a legit MP5 is an SBR, even though it shoots a 9mm cartridge. So,
right.
Why are a lot of people going to the 9mm?
I think it's cost of ammunition.
I think there's a few reasons. I think it's, like Adam said, cost of ammunition. You practice twice as much compared to rifle.
Okay.
There's kind of I wouldn't say a growing trend, but you see it once in a while where like a municipal range, a county range, or even a city range, and some private ranges located near large population centers don't allow for centerfire rifle cartridges to be fired in their outdoor shooting areas.
Okay.
So you could build an AR-9 or whatever type of pistol caliber carbine you want to build or buy.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have all the same lights, lasers, gadgets, doohickeys, Beanie Babies mounted to it, and I can shoot that gun outside. Sorry.
Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
I mean, does anybody even know what those are?
I don't have any Beanie Babies mounted to this bad boy. But
it was a tactical joke.
Want to see my collection?
So now I can practice with the same doohickeys, the same ergonomics, really, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Recoil impulse isn't going to be the same, but I'm still getting the same sight picture.
Yeah.
Very similar because it's a lot of times that bolt, same reciprocation. And so for less cost, and I can do it at this range that normally doesn't allow me to shoot my AR.
Gotcha.
So, and they're becoming popular too because the competition is, there's starting to be a lot of competition outlets for pistol caliber carbines.
Yeah.
So,
I think they're cool.
I love them. Like the sub 10 inch AR-9 is a super fun gun to shoot.
Yeah.
And there's a...
They suppress really well.
Yeah, they suppress really well. They're, again, low recoil, low noise is a really big thing. Man. So getting a new shooter into shooting a carbine, it's with an AR, it's like...
Yeah.
It's just one step up from a BB gun.
Speaking of new shooters, too. Okay, so I know that previously I already mentioned that, like, for whatever reason in my head, whenever I think of SBRs, you know, I was kind of like, oh, it's badass. I don't want to make them seem bad or scary or anything like that, right? That's what we all want not to have happen. But, okay, let's think about now a gun that required, we talked a little bit about this with suppressors, an item that requires, you know, tax stamps and, ooh, you know, it's like for whatever reason, it's very specially monitored or whatever. An SBR for a beginning shooter. Do you feel like there's any difference between that and using a full-length rifle, or is it kind of like, yeah, you can hand a new shooter whatever? Should they start with a full-length and go to an SBR? Like, anything there at all with new shooters? It's just kind of like, eh, it doesn't really matter.
I mean,
I think too short can be problematic.
Too short's definitely a problem.
Totally. Very pointable and wieldable. And
good,
like,
music, though.
Yeah, I think you can take something like this and kind of keep it pointed in the right direction a little easier versus like a lightsaber is like that and it's pointed at you.
It takes a little bit longer for the barrel to sweep all the way, or you can kind of catch it first.
That should tell you something about pointability too, though.
I find myself using this
good
phrase
point,
a lot,
Ruben.
with the point jokes.
Yeah.
I get your point.
But I find myself saying this a lot lately, but shooting is shooting. So, like, I don't believe that necessarily you should learn how to shoot a long rifle before you shoot a short one.
Same like iron sights.
Yeah, same thing with iron sights. Like, shooting is shooting. So, you know, I wouldn't say good, bad, or otherwise that way. From a purchasing standpoint, I would definitely say someone looking at a short barrel rifle should do their homework before they buy something instead of just slapping it together or buying something really leather. Because as the guns get shorter, they can get more temperamental. Okay. And some companies have it figured out, and some just threw it together and called it their version. Sure. So,
especially if you come into it shooting something that's fairly soft shooting, like you go to the range with somebody who shoots 3-gun or competition, and like you shoot their, you know, 18-inch with a muzzle brake, and like it's soft, it feels like you're shooting a 22, and then you get behind like a sub gun or something like that, and it's like there's significantly more noise, flash, and recoil. Like,
push,
it may not be your first. Like, if you pass somebody at 10.5-inch AR, mm-hmm, and tell them to shoot it the first time, they might not be like, wow, that was really soft. Like,
right.
But there's trade offs that go with that.
They can be a little barky.
They can be a little louder, but yeah, I mean, that's why everybody should have suppressors, anyways.
Well, good point. Right. Again. Yeah. So that actually kind of answered my question, because I was thinking, well, maybe for like maybe a small frame shooter or a youth shooter, that might be like a good choice for, I guess, handleability, if that's even a word. But then when you start bringing in like maybe the noise and the recoil, maybe it's not a good choice.
Well, that, and also how, again, like they're saying, how easy it is to just accidentally be like, whoop, you know?
Right.
Well, what keeps me in the SBR game is the balance of them. Like, I've kind of like my favorite size right now is 11.5 inches. And so just the way that balances out on a gun with an optic on it, I like the way that shoots, unless I have a reason that I need to shoot something else. Mm-hmm. So a well-balanced gun is always better than a not well-balanced gun. So for newer
And is that your favorite SBR, or is that, nope, that's my all-around favorite.
That's my all-around favorite, okay. Unless I'm, you know, like, okay, like when we go to Texas for matches, like it's not smart to shoot 3-gun matches in Texas with an SBR. I've done it.
That's because they're usually like riflemen's
long. But yeah, they're rifleman's match. I mean, they're out in the plains where the wind blows. Like, yeah, you need velocity out there.
Okay.
But like, I mean, if I'm just going out shooting today, I mean, an 11.5-inch SBR that's what I take to carbine classes. That's what I like to shoot at demos. That's what I like to...
I do agree that they feel nicer.
They're really like pointable, and they're balanced. Very, and usually you can get... I like a butt-heavy, like, AR. Personally, I like more of the weight in the back. I don't like as much of the weight out on the front, because They typically tend to be more pointable. It follows your movement better.
Right.
They track a little bit better. You can start and stop faster with it when you're transitioning.
Yeah.
You know, that whole kind of like
the
that
mass
over.
Is...
Yeah, it's back here, right? And like, so like, I liken it to a lightsaber all the time. Like, the weight's here, but the blade's moving out there, right? Like,
yeah.
And so you guys, like, you've seen that, like, exaggerated, like, big C-clamp grip that guys use on longer ARs. Like, you don't have to worry.
Oh, yeah, I started using it.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that.
Instagram.
It's working then.
Yeah.
Too.
But, yeah. I started shooting three-gun with a 12-pound, 18-inch rifle. And I got tired of it.
I can imagine that being the case.
You know,
there is something like with a shorter gun, though. You know, like it does almost. You know, when you get into your shooting position, if most of the gun is, you know, like when I think of being in the shooting position, it's almost a little bit like when you have, you know, right-handed shooter, you got your right hand on the pistol grip, and you got your left hand out. You're almost kind of like making a hugging motion. You know, mm-hmm. And if most of the gun is inside of your hug, so to speak. It is just that much less taxing on you.
Yeah.
You know, as once it comes outside of that, it's a lot of weight that
it's
you have
fatigue.
To continue. It is
fatigue. Fatigue starts to set in.
Yeah.
You're talking about velocities there. Like, on average, what do you think your decrease would be between, like, a 16 and, like, the 11? You said 11 points.
Is it 100 feet per second per inch?
Typically, I think there's a threshold on, like, 5.56, but, like, if you were to go... There's kind of a point of diminishing returns at somewhere around like 22 inches or something.
Yeah. Okay.
But like your main velocity loss is going to be like under 10 inches. Like you start to really lose it fast. I think it's about 100 feet per second per inch. And then of course, as you get shorter and shorter, it's not linear. It's yeah, exponential, right?
So it's all of a sudden.
So, but there's typically, I think between 14 and a half and 20 inches, it's like somewhere around 50 feet per second per inch. So you could expect on a, like Adam and I both have PWS 111s, which is an 11.73,
yeah,
I think, inch barrel. And I can get anywhere between 22 and 2400 feet per second on 68 to 75 grain ammo.
Oh, wow.
Versus in a 16, we'll call it 18-inch barrel, I'm up over 28. So, like, that 50 feet per second per inch kind of starts to really make sense in there.
Gotcha.
11.73-inch barrel.
Yeah, and which is
a NATO spec.
It is.
Yes. It's not just
what is that? Arbitrary. Is that something in millimeters or something? Because I was going to ask, is this like when you go into Walmart and they're like, oh, this costs like $362, and you're like, wow, they must have really tried to slash every penny to arrive at that weird number.
Yeah, they told me that. That's an international, it's like an export thing.
Yeah.
Some arbitrary rule in the exportation to other countries or acceptance into NATO countries. It's that. So, yeah, rifle companies will make, like a lot of them that you see in the market are 11 and a half inches or something like that. It's because they're hitting that export specification, but they'll have 10.3 inches for the U.S. military specification.
Got it.
But, yeah, it's an export thing.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and 14 and a half comes from an A2 flash hider. It's an inch and a half long.
Yeah.
And you can pin it to a 14 and a half, and it makes 16.
Yep.
So that's kind of, at least to my knowledge, where that comes from.
And when you're talking about pinning, like, describe what's going on there.
So that you would thread on your muzzle device to a point where it indexes where you want it, and they will drill a hole through the threaded portion on the shoulder of the muzzle device.
Okay.
Create a dimple in the threaded portion of your barrel.
Okay, right.
Put a steel pin in, and typically most guys will take that. Once they get that pin in, they'll hammer it down until it flattens out and mushrooms out, kind of fills that void.
Yeah.
Okay. And then throw a tack weld on top of it, and then grind it flat so it's nice and
okay.
Basically, making it prepped. So
you can't
just
twist it
spin
off.
That.
Just can't remove it.
Yeah. Yep.
Wrench.
It's permanently attached.
They don't say you have to do it well. Just saying.
I've never been able to get any of mine off.
Yeah. Yep. Me neither.
You were saying earlier you were giving some you were throwing some shade to building your own SBR. I've got one I built. It works pretty good. You remember that one I shot at the Hornady match?
Oh yeah.
Really loud.
Really loud.
Really loud.
Your muzzle brake didn't help.
Everybody
but it's really
hated,
loud.
Everybody hated me. But it shoots mega soft. It's an 11.5.
Some turn out really good.
It's a very Franken gun, too.
Now,
in fact, it used this lower receiver, too, which the lower receiver, like... Now, okay, let me ask you this. What is the difference between going out and getting... Like, in my opinion, when I see guns, you're talking about, you know, like, oh, factory built. I agree with you. Every time I hold a factory built gun, I'm like, gosh, why do I build guns anymore? These are so much better than what I can build at home. But, like, most of the complicated stuff I feel like that you can really screw up at home happens in the upper. This is my opinion. Tell me if I'm wrong. Yeah, I'm fully open to being wrong. So why wouldn't you say go and get the whatever form is where you're going to build it yourself that apparently at this point in time takes not as long. Go get that and then get the factory built upper and just stick it on your like homebrewed lower. Or is there a lot to the lower that
I have a thought on this too.
No, not the lower. That's not what would scare me. Not even scare is not the right word, but
he's shaking.
Who's shaking?
So,
Adam?
Yeah. Kind of like we were talking about in the 10-minute talk. I'm not sure where this is gonna get released in relation to that. But so
10-minute talk around DI versus
DI versus piston. So what drives the gun is gas pressure built up in the barrel from the time the bullet passes the gas port to the time it exits the muzzle and pressure drops to zero.
Correct. So at this point.
Yep. So you need that dwell time.
Dwell time.
The shorter the barrel gets, the more volatile that balance is. On longer barrels, the pressure curve. On a rifle length gas system, the powder is a lot further along in its burning sequence and it has a much more consistent pressure.
Okay.
If we're going to tap that gas earlier in its cycle, because we shot the same cartridge through a different
length
barrel.
You're getting it closer to the volatile initial.
Yeah, so it's a lot more of a spike than a wave, right?
Okay.
So we got to hit that spike at the right time. And then the gas port size in that barrel. So not just how much pressure do we have, but what gas port did you use?
Yeah, okay.
And then what gas tube did you use to get it there? And what weight bolt carrier are you using? And then what buffer do you have behind it? Like that all becomes more important as we're dealing with a smaller operating window of gas pressure.
Yeah.
Like the whole system is a little bit less forgiving.
And I think
Why wouldn't you go just get the completed factory upper with the BCG and everything?
That's awesome.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, would you do that and then just slap it on a lower that you just threw together?
Oh, yeah.
Buffer thing, I don't understand. I'd have to, like, figure out. Buffers are confusing to me.
Right?
Every time I think they're simple, then I find out that they're completely not, and they can make everything, like, work or not work.
Yeah, but you'll have want a manufacturer that has, like, an engineering department to have, like, figured out the gas port size and the gas system length, and you'll want them to figure all that out.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm following.
That's where I get at with home building.
Don't go and get any factory build up, but you still want to get a good factory build up.
I think the thing about building ARs is that there's, like, wow, I really like that gun, but Jimmy, like, instead of this handguard, I would get a different one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to get a different gas block to work with that. And then you have to attach it differently because you didn't want that
different barrel nut
front. Yeah, and so then as you start to, you know, one of the biggest things about going to SBR is, like, they're shorter, they're more pointable, they're, you know, more compact, they're ergonomic, and you start to have these trade-offs. But if you get a company that designed all those parts to work with one another in that configuration, that's where you have less of a likelihood of running into issues.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, like, the guy who's like, yeah, I really like that gun, but I'm going to put a 10-inch barrel on it instead of a 14.5. And then they used a different buffer system, and they used a different, you know, gas block or a different bolt carrier. And, like, all these, you have tolerance stacking on stuff that then all of a sudden that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. A lot of the trial and error has been done by professionals.
And some of them shoot better than others. Like some manufacturers really have dialed it in, you know, into something. I mean, some of the lightest shooting guns that I own are 11.5-inch guns.
That's got to be so tough for the firearms manufacturers out there. Because it's like, I can't go out as an AR-15 manufacturer. Even if I really know my stuff, I can't go out and make an AR where, like, I have 50 different SKUs, and the only difference between the 50 different SKUs is a handguard. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I had to go and figure out all these different, you know, and it's like, now I'm over here building SKUs 1 through 10, and everybody who wants SKUs, you know, 10 through 50 is clamoring for their ARs and wondering why I haven't built them yet, you know, and It's like you're out of stock. And I mean, so they have to pick, you know, one handguard, for example, right, and like one whatever that they're using. And then inevitably, like you were saying, someone's like, oh, I just want to tweak that, and winds up tweaking a bunch of other stuff.
Or you see companies that are really well known for quality, but they're not flashy, you know, and they don't have like quite as much, we'll call it, just call it marketing, right, around their product. And you see people that are like, man, I wish XYZ would just sell the lower. And they're like, no, we don't just sell lowers. And it's probably because they focus on selling systems that they know work. And that's where their whole reputation right. came from, versus a company who's like, yeah, we'll sell you the lower, we'll sell you the handguard, we'll sell you the barrel, whatever you want. You're opening yourself up to, I think, the possibility that somebody could use your product in a way that it wasn't designed, and then it doesn't work, and then they post a bad review.
Right.
Yeah.
So you kind of avert some of that growth potential, but you're saving your
yeah. It'd be like if we
reputation.
All of a sudden
it's kind of like a long game.
Yeah, we're selling scope eye pieces now.
Yeah, like if we started selling erector tubes and all this, that, and the other thing, and then somebody's like, "Oh, I made this thing and I can't see out of it. Vortex sucks." I'd be like, well,
yeah, yeah. Well, it's attached to your steering
real.
Wheel on your car. That's why. Yeah,
exactly.
but and you may want to add an objective lens.
That's true.
But I think maybe what you're getting at on the lower side of things is that. Yeah, there are a lot of people who just register a lower or two mm-hmm. and have multiple uppers for
yeah.
them.
So, yeah.
So do I have...
This is like yeah. this. I don't have that same upper on here that was right. shooting really well at that
two-face.
Match. But this is the same two-face lower.
Yeah.
Old two-face. For those watching on YouTube, one side of the lower is painted. That's because we did this for a photo shoot. And the other is not painted for yeah. a different photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
You may see old two-face from time to time in the catalog here and there.
Yeah, what so about, you absolutely can anyway, do that. We yeah. won't get into variances and things like that, but
like the receiver slot, like this one has.
Yeah. So that if you have,
doesn't
if,
matter that much though.
Yeah. But yeah, having a registered lower and swapping uppers, totally doable. Absolutely do that.
Yeah,
I absolutely do that.
Well, yeah, and be, just because you have something SBR'd or registered, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you can't. Not you don't have to have an SBR, like
you have a long, yeah, right.
Like
you can run 16 inch on it if
right.
you want.
Correct.
You, typically,
now,
if you're
okay,
doing,
yeah, now I get
if you're
saying,
doing the
yeah.
home build, you have to register yep. it at a certain length,
mm-hmm.
and you would want to go the shortest that you would ever intend to put on it.
Right.
Yeah, that's yeah. the thing that always right. threw me off because I
but
always
it's not
felt
like oh,
married.
I permanently have to have it in this configuration.
Right. Like if you register it at 14.5. And you don't want to run a pin and welded muzzle device, that's as short as that lower can go. Am I correct?
Correct, by the yeah. number. Yeah, so you...
Oh, you couldn't slap a 10.5 on it if you registered it as a 14.5?
Right.
Or yeah. are we getting into legal stuff? That
well,
we're
yeah,
aware,
let's so. Clarify that real quick. Okay. So you're going to register it, if you're form wanting, you're going to register it
not
as
a
like a complete gun
up,
with a
lawyer.
Barrel length. And so that, in the eyes of the ATF, that is the gun.
Yes. Yep.
So you'll want to have that configuration in your inventory.
Okay.
You're going to want to do that.
It's registered as a short barrel rifle. So all legalities apply to it as a short barrel rifle, even if it has a longer barrel on it. So if you take that lower and you put a longer barrel on it, it's still an SBR in the eyes of the law, which applies primarily to cross-border stuff.
Okay. I see
so
what you're saying.
So if you're going to cross state lines,
yeah.
Form 20?
Yeah, you have to file Form 20 to cross state lines and things like that. It's still an SBR.
Oh, that's a really good
Once
point.
An SBR, always an SBR, no matter
good
what
to know.
What
Once
you have
go to go short.
Can we go into a little bit? I know that isn't there some lowers get classified as a pistol, and those cannot be turned, I'm probably saying it wrong, but everybody just assume I'm saying it wrong. Those can't be turned into an SBR. Or some get registered as a rifle and then they can't be turned into a pistol. Or wasn't there at some point like a
I
weird thing?
I think reclassifying
with,
it is okay.
Is it?
I believe you could buy that and then classify that lower as an SBR if you do the appropriate paperwork. That's what we're seeing a lot of, I believe.
I think.
But like if you were to go and buy a lower set, there's certain regulations in certain states where bought a lower and bought it as a rifle, you can't turn it into a pistol.
There's a lot of information and misinformation on that.
I don't give any misinformation.
I'm not even confident on my knowledge of it. When I was in firearms retail in a different state, a complete, right, like a full-length AR-15 came onto our book as a rifle. or a pistol if it had a brace.
Yeah.
So you bought it from the manufacturer as a rifle or as a pistol. And then if it came in as just a lower, if we were selling people just a lower, that went on to record as an other because mm-hmm. it's not anything yet.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Others can be made into either or after the sale.
Yeah.
Right?
Depending but it on how can't you be changed.
Yeah. But according to ATF, once it takes a form,
you can't, change it.
Be changed.
Yeah, that's one of those things you definitely probably look into.
Yeah, I think the exception is registering it as an SBR because you're going through the process of legally defining it
basically
as something else.
Manufacturing it into something else.
Yeah, in the eyes of the ATF, you're remanufacturing it.
Got it. Okay.
But if you're not remanufacturing it, technically it has to stay the way it was created.
Yeah, I'm following you. But yeah, as always, we are not lawyers, so double check this stuff. But I think it's coming back to me now. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember at some point in time, and again, like times change. You never know, overnight things can change. But I do remember some people mentioning there, you know, there was like that weirdness, you know. But
yep.
I noticed on yours, Jim, you've got some engraving on it.
Yes, I do.
What's the scoop on that?
So yeah, you need to have an engraving.
So
right?
Any firearm that is manufactured needs to have the entity that made it,
mm-hmm.
the state in which it was manufactured, and a serial number.
Yep.
So when your AR-15 comes to you, it has XYZ arms, you know, Durka Durka, New York, or wherever it was made. Right. And then, you know, number 00231, you know? Yeah. So if you take an already manufactured lower and decide you're going to make it into an SBR, you're remanufacturing it.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to engrave it with the manufacturer, you, and where you live, you know, the state, the city and state in which you live. So
it already has a serial number. Okay.
Right. It already has a serial number. So if you buy an already manufactured one from XYZ company, you don't have to engrave it. It's already engraved.
Gotcha.
It was just transferred to you.
Okay.
If you are manufacturing one, if you're going through that Form 1 process to make one, then you have to have it engraved because you are essentially manufacturing an SBR.
Gotcha.
Out of that part. So in the case of Jim's, he bought that lower and decided to build it into that SBR. Therefore, he had to engrave it with the manufacturer and city and state of origin.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Indubitably.
That's kind of the last step, though.
Yep.
You know what? So you've done the forms.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have e-forms for this?
It kind of goes in and out. I heard it got turned off again.
Oh.
Okay. As of a couple weeks ago, they had it.
It was? Okay, well, maybe that was bad information.
Fill out the forms, though.
Mm-hmm.
Pay some money.
Yep.
You have some patience.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, maybe shoot one of your other guns for a little bit.
Maybe.
Or something. I don't know. Then you get it, the thing back. Hopefully you did it right. I know that I screwed up, I will say, on, it was painful, 5 SBR applications that I sent in all at once. And I'm going to admit this, and everybody can laugh at me, and I guess I just don't care because you can laugh at me because clearly you never make mistakes.
We're here for your entertainment.
anyway, yeah, that's it. Because what I did was I had some lowers that on the lower, it was engraved other. For the caliber.
Multi.
Oh, multi.
Multi, yep. That's what it was. And so then when you go in, they had like a repository bank of calibers you could choose from. And the only reason that the calibers were in this bank were because other people in the past had like chosen them. So then they like got added to their list. So sure enough, somebody in the past had made my same mistake. So I know I'm not alone. And they put multi in because that's what their lower receiver said. Well, that doesn't fly, or it didn't at the time with the ATF.
Yep.
So don't write multi. That is not an option. You have to choose one.
You do have
one.
To pick one.
They're not okay with several to many.
Yeah. So anyway, I picked multi. I get 5 things back that say, oh, sorry, because multi isn't a, you know, like allowed thing to say. It doesn't work. And there's no sort of like when you're in the airport, you know, and you're like, oh, shoot, I forgot. You know, I got my pocket knife on me. Like, oh, would you like to check it? You know, there's none of that. It's like, no, go all the way back to the beginning.
Do not collect $200.
Yeah.
See, I can see Mark getting that call. Be like, hey, yeah. So I was doing this, and I'll tell you why I selected multi. It's because I want to use this with a lot of different uppers.
Yeah.
You get it, right?
See really what maximize and so what caliber? Oh, lots.
Tell you what. What I think would happen to Mark is that Mark's gonna would submit his form, and then he would get a phone call from the ATF, and they'd say, "Hey, we're going through your forms here. Just wanted to be sure you want this to be in 300 WISM,
and a 16-inch barrel length. You know, you don't have to do an SBR form, right?
Sure, you know that's okay. Oh, by the way, I just said
just trying to check my
bases. Short.
I just said 300 WISM, and did you know there's a bunch of people in Texas who just get flaming mad when we say WISM?
Really?
They hate it.
WISM.
Some guy came into our booth and was literally about ready to put me in a chokehold. Hey, how's it going? About to put me in chokehold because we just kept saying WISM.
Why is he upset by that?
Because they say WSM.
WISM.
WISM,
WISM, WISM, WISM, WISM, WISM, WISM, WISM, WISM, WISM.
Oh, great. Now we're all dead.
Anyway, I apologize to our viewers who say WSM.
You guys have fun with those emails tomorrow.
I feel like it's just like a... It's like a slang
thing.
He
said we sound stupid.
And it's quicker, like WSM.
Man,
like,
it took
I
you
feel
a
like
long
we're shortening
time to say
the
that.
Process.
You know what else you can say? It only works with people from Texas, but you can. You know what you get when you split Alaska in half?
What do you get?
Texas is the third biggest state.
Wow. Double upset.
Well, we've
they
done it
that.
Now. Anyway. To the topic at hand, I can't wait to see Mark's SBR 16-inch 300 WISM. But, yeah, SBRs are pretty neat.
They're cool. They're practical.
They're hip.
They're hip.
They're in.
They're hip.
And so hot right now.
Do an SBR. Don't do a pistol.
Forbidden fruit is kind of what I was thinking of earlier. Kind of like, even though they're not forbidden, they're not forbidden.
I keep it's like right all the ways that you want to explain like how cool they are. Somebody
like
could take it.
Pop.
Somebody could take it the wrong way, and you don't want to do that, right? You know. So it's like they're not
great fruit.
They're cool. They're just
they're
cool.
They're cool, and they work really well.
It is interesting. They are a little bit finickier than full lengths. It makes me feel extremely lucky that
they
I have one that runs well.
They have the potential to be.
Yeah,
but also they're really. I guess a part of their popularity, right? In the recent times, probably also stems around the popularity of suppressors. So as suppressors got more popular, short barrel rifles get more practical because a short barrel rifle with a suppressor is about the length of a normal-ish sized carbine. So I think those two kind of go hand in hand too. So if you're into suppressors and AR-15s,
which you should be,
you probably,
cans are
probably
cool.
Might like SBRs too.
I really love the idea of, you know, like when you look at a 9mm SBR, because you think about the fact, you mentioned it earlier, a 9mm is designed to have everything be burned up in, like, what, a 4.5-inch barrel or something like that? Five?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That is how long you can make your barrel in an AR-15. I was just talking about earlier, like, the practicality of a 4.5-5-inch barrel. It's not that practical because you got this little, like, nub sticking out. But if you put a 9mm suppressor on the end of it, like an octane, like an octane 8.5-inch long suppressor, which makes everything go...
Yeah, and you put a handguard that you can recess it under.
One of them big, fat handguards. Yeah. The only thing I will say is you should probably like either wrap it in something or wear gloves when you shoot it because it gets pretty lava hot. But it's cool.
It is cool.
My first PCC, that's what it was. It's a 9-inch barrel with that Amtac suppressor, that over-barrel thing. And then I got a Lancer handguard that goes over the top.
Over-barrels are sweet.
Yes.
Because then they, over-barrels. We should do a podcast on just over-barrel suppressors.
I got one down in the safe.
Okay.
I do, too.
One of these days.
All right. Buckle up, everybody.
Last calls. I'll throw one out there. SBRs are cool. I win. I got the cool, the easy cop-out. Last call before Mark did.
Also think SBRs are cool.
Yeah, but now you're the copycat. I was the originator of that last call. Adam?
Did you say practical?
Winchester short barreled rifle. WSSBR MR Magnum rifle.
I'm taking that one too.
There's a lot of useless verbiage out there, but just do the paperwork and don't think about it too hard. Just do it.
It's the truth. The longer you wait, the more SBRs you could have had.
Stop back, sign it.
Stop.
Sorry.
You're cutting into mine now.
Ryan's going to have to bleep me out. I usually do pretty good at that, but
if you think about it and do it, you'll have your SBR before you think about it again. Don't make excuses.
That was deep.
It's kind of like the people who say they don't want to wait for a suppressor. You see them every year at Thanksgiving, and they're like, man, I just don't want to wait. It's like,
could have had
I'd get one of those, but I just don't want to wait.
Well, you just waited.
Yep.
That's what you said 2 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're not scary either. Let's clarify that a million times. They're not scary.
They're less scary because velocity is lower.
Seriously. Good point.
Well, those scary long-barreled rifles.
Long-barreled rifles are scary.
Yeah.
Scarier.
They're more deadlier.
Yeah.
I think it just comes down to the right tool for the job. Some hammers are big. Some are small. Some wrenches are big. Some are small.
Ruben liked that one.
What's wrong with that?
Not a thing.
Right tool for the job, Mark. All right. Yeah, what did everybody think about SBRs? We want to hear your thoughts on SBRs. I know some people don't always want to be like, oh, I have one, so don't necessarily, you don't have to go and tell us what your SBRs are, but tell us what you think about them and how cool they are. And also, tell us what SBR, if you could have any of them, would you have? Mine would be a PS90. Oh, no, I'm sorry, a P90.
P90?
Not a PS90.
Cool. That's an interesting choice.
Because it's the best choice.
It is 5.7.
Yes. What would your guys be? Real fast. That's what we'll end on.
It would probably be a pistol caliber, and it would probably be, right now, it would be BNT APC-9, the contract gun.
Ooh.
Those are pretty sweet.
Good choice. Good choice.
I'll also take Ruben's because I think that sounds really cool. I was going to say a PCC, like a 9.
Okay.
And then I liked his, like...
Oh, you know what you should get? You should get one of the... One of the AK, the 9mm AK SBRs.
Ooh, a KR9.
Yeah.
That. KR9 Elite.
That.
That's something I didn't even know about.
Well, you, yeah, that fits.
All right,
you.
Change my answer.
Adam, dream SBR.
I think my PWS Mark 111s must be rabbits because they just keep multiplying.
You're living the dream. Look at you. And on that note, we're losing it. So we are going to sign off.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. See you.
All right, that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Vortex Nation podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hit that subscribe button so you can always stay up to date on the latest happenings over here at the Vortex Nation podcast. Leave us a review or comment down below. We want to hear what you have to say about the show, maybe what you like, maybe what you didn't like, so that way we can make these podcasts as good as they can be. You can also follow us on Instagram at Vortex Nation Podcast. We'll be posting about each episode released, so that way you can go back, find these things, maybe grab a little nugget of information that you can take with you to the range, out in the field, or maybe to the kitchen if we're talking about some good food. So, again, everybody, thanks, and happy hunting and shooting. We appreciate it. Have a good one.